Welcome to Oncology Data Advisor, where we explore the latest advances in cancer research and patient care. Thanks for listening to this episode. Be sure to visit oncdata.com for more content, including expert perspectives from leading oncology thought leaders, FDA approvals, patient advocacy, and much more. And don't forget to subscribe to Oncology Data Advisor on social media to stay up to date on the latest videos, podcasts, and more.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's edition of the Oncology Data Advisor Fellows Forum. Today, I'm joined again by Drs. Hock and Hadfield. And today we are discussing Testicular Cancer Awareness Month. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
Great to be here.
Thanks, folks. So, you know, this is a very interesting topic because of perhaps a lot of misconception within the community as it relates to testicular cancer. Sure, a lot of folks would be familiar with the story of Lance Armstrong and how that was kind of discussed in the media, but testicular cancer is actually quite a morbid and hopefully not lethal disease as it used to be back many years ago. But I hope we can dive into this topic and really give our viewers a little sense of what we're discussing today. So with that introduction, why don't we go ahead and dive right in? Could we talk a little bit about maybe signs or symptoms that are consistent with the diagnosis of testicular cancer?
Thanks, Dr. Karef. So as you mentioned, I'm Wakas. I'm an internal medicine resident at NYU and starting an oncology fellowship at UChicago later this summer. And yeah, as you alluded to, you know, this is the most common, but also the most durable form of cancer in adolescent and young adult males. And because of the high survivorship rate, a lot of survivors of testicular cancer spend a lot of their life as survivors, which we can't always talk about for other forms of cancer. In terms of sort of the most common presenting symptom, it's really like a painless lump or swelling in the testicle, but even feeling a heaviness in the groin or abdomen or a change in size or shape or discomfort in the testicle or scrotum are really sort of the common presenting signs that that people see, which is why it's important sort of regularly just check your testicles on exam.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of maybe, I'm not sure if stigma is the right word, but a lot of the kind of hush-hush about discussing this disease relates to maybe physiologic location and any sort of social connotations with that. But super important to make sure that we are discussing and thinking about things like testicular masses, especially in the appropriate age group, which generally, as you were alluding to, is in this kind of adolescent and young adult population in the majority of cases that we see. Now, we, as you were also alluding to, we know about some risk factors for a disease like failure of testicles to descend during puberty and that sort of thing, but there's also some hereditary syndromes that we always have to keep in mind, but certainly very important to kind of check yourself if that is something that your pediatrician or adult medicine doctor instructs you to do. In the absence of USPSTF guidelines, we really have to make sure we kind of get that message out. So thanks for the great intro. Why don't we talk a little bit about the management of testicular cancer, or should I say cancers, given that we kind of put things into the two major bucket groups of seminoma and non-seminomas. Well, interestingly, as it relates to testicular cancers, we really have a lot to rely on the upfront folks who see this disease, which includes urologists and urologic oncologists. And why is that? Rarely do we get the benefit of a biopsy of a testicle. Often what's seen is a testicular mass that is felt and then diagnosed by ultrasound, CT scan, or some sort of other image modality. And then upfront orchiectomy is often performed to remove the mass if it's thought to be as suspicious enough on exam. Of course, there are some tumor markers that can be obtained to kind of help us elucidate the diagnostic pathway, but we often will see upfront surgery. In radiation, doctors also sometimes play a role depending on what is found intraoperatively, if there's also things like retroperitoneal lymph node dissections and that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, we are treating a lot of these folks with chemotherapy combinations, and they're unique combinations. Let's take a quick step back and review the history of testicular cancer, which really had kind of breakthroughs, I think, in the latter parts of the 20th century, where we found that unique combinations of platinum-containing regimens, specifically combining with etoposide and bleomycin, really led to improved outcomes. So we know that a lot of folks will get either single-agent platinum in the earlier stage setting or these platinum combinations, as I just mentioned, in the later stage setting. And we do see, thankfully, very high cure rates, in excess of 90% in a lot of the cases that are treated in a modern day case series. And that's really the goal for management. Now, of course, there will be a few relapsed and refractory cases here and there where, again, platinum-based combinations can be used down the line. But uniquely among the solid tumors, we are treating for cure in this illness. So very important to kind of keep in mind as you're educating yourself on the management of testicular cancers and educating your patients on what to expect with treatment. So why don't we go ahead and also discuss some of the aligned topics that have to do with the detection, diagnosis, and management of testicular cancers? Dr. Hatfield, could you give us a little bit of insight as it relates to survivorship for these folks and the special population as we addressed briefly already?
Yeah, I thank you both for such a wonderful background on management and screening. I think with this patient population, it's particularly good to keep in mind that this is a patient population who has an incredibly high cure rate for their cancer. So as you mentioned, 90% higher in both localized disease and disease that has spread to regional lymph nodes. So incredibly successful treatments, which is great, but I think one thing that maybe we don't talk enough about is the long-term follow-up after treatment. So these are relatively young patients who then have a lifetime of follow-up with different subspecialties based on the toxicities they experience. So for instance, the regimens that you mentioned, you can have long-term peripheral neuropathy, you can have long-term cardiac toxicities, pulmonary toxicities, depending on how well you tolerate the therapy and long-term sequelae of those, and just long-term follow-up with your oncologist for monitoring for relapse, which is, I think we don't give enough credence to the fact that causes an enormous amount of stress and is very, very challenging for these patients to have to keep going back and getting screened with tumor markers and things to see if the cancer should come back. Even though it's unlikely, extremely unlikely based on the statistics, it's still very, very hard for them from a psychological standpoint. And they need quite a bit of support in that from a survivorship standpoint. And I think, we want to be cognizant of those things as well, because even though we've cured the patients in the vast majority of cases, we still do have things that we need to help support them with as they continue on in their cancer journey.
Yeah, thank you for touching on such a salient part of the care of patients with testicular cancer. Some of the most salient patient encounters I've had during my fellowship involve patients with testicular cancer, be it from topics ranging from the anxiety and psychological trauma, as you were alluding to, but also things like fertility preservation. Like, doc, is it okay if I store my sperm for banking later on if I have cancer in a testicle? I mean, these are serious things that are dealt with at often very young ages, right? As low as 18 in a lot of cases, even sometimes in pediatric populations, God forbid. So really something to keep a close eye on and to really make sure you take the time in clinic to educate your patients appropriately. I don't know if either of you have had any encounters that you'd feel comfortable sharing as well.
I had a patient that I saw in service just a few months ago, back before the holidays, who he was in his early 20s and was found to have testicular cancer and got inpatient chemotherapy. And then he actually had a horrible pulmonary toxicity from the bleomycin. So, we do see these things, and I think that's a good reminder that sometimes with we don't get as many wins as we would like as oncologists. So we can be very, very optimistic. This is a cancer that's curable in the vast majority of patients. There's a lot of silver lining here, but there is a lot of toxicities and there's a lot of downstream effects that we want to make sure that we're talking to patients enough, because there certainly are side effects to these treatments, and they're very hard for patients to get. And again, someone in their early 20s getting cancer is a horrible, horrible thing. And involving as many support services as you can, the palliative care team to help, with those conversations and adjusting to this new diagnosis, I think it's critical.
Oh, thanks for sharing that. And also for me, just sort of at the older age of the spectrum, I cover cognitive clinic in the VA hospital. And actually last fall there was a study like fairly fun to fight study that found an association between PFAS, a chemical, and also testicular cancer as an endpoint. So more concerned about toxic exposures that can contribute to testicular cancer.
Yes, unfortunately, we keep learning about the environmental links to so many cancers as we keep beefing up that research. So thank you for sharing that. That's a very important point. All right, great. I don't know if either of you had any other kind of concluding or closing remarks or things that we didn't really dive into our discussion so far.
No, I think that was a great discussion. I think it's an important topic and one to really highlight, survivorship in these patient populations.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you both for your time today and thank our viewership for tuning in. A rare tumor type, relatively speaking, as it relates to incidence and prevalence in the United States, at least, but certainly something that's worth taking the extra moment to educate yourself on so you can do the best for your patient. That's all for today. Thanks so much. Take care.
Thank you.
Take care, everyone.